Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Setting the Record Straight. This is your program host, Brenda K. Sanders. I'm glad that you tuned in to the program today. Thank you for tuning in. You know, I've been looking all day and just listening to some people. You know, I guess it doesn't matter who, but just some people talking about today, this day, and 9/11. And, you know, I'm trying to think. I'm already forgetting whether it happened in 2000 or 2001. I believe it's 2001. But let me tell you, I've heard some accounts of what people were doing, and some of them were so sad. I mean, so sad. But I remember that day as well. I can remember even the day that Martin Luther King was shot. Going to the doctor. My mom was taking me to the doctor, and I remember that. So it's one of those days that you remember. But I remember that day, and this is just my memory, that I was, you know, in my office just working on something. I just remember sitting at my desk. And I know that it was a bad time for me, okay? I guess I won't tell all the facts about it. But it was a bad time for me, and I was going through some things already. But, you know, God was really blessing me in spite of, and I remember that morning. I don't know if this was a Tuesday morning. This may have been a Tuesday morning. I was sitting at my desk, and I'm doing some work. I probably was working on a case or something. And I remember I had a TV in my office to my left. I can see it right now. And I remember looking at the TV. You know, it was right there in front of my face. And my sister called me and said, "Are you looking at TV right now?" And I said, "Yes, on. What's going on?" I mean, the TV was already on right there. I guess I wasn't looking at it. It was just keeping me company, as it often does. And I looked. And I believe just as I looked, I saw, I don't know if it was a replay or the actual event. I don't think it was the actual event. But I saw one of the planes hitting one of the towers. And then I turned up the TV and just remember looking at the rest of the broadcast. I don't think it was a Tuesday because I remember, well, maybe it was a Tuesday, but I remember maybe going to church service the next evening or maybe the next afternoon. There was a special service because apparently there were so many grieving people. And I remember being in church maybe midday or something, and the minister was ministering and praying with people. And I remember being unable to sleep, thinking about that incident. And I think I had just looked at too much coverage is what I had done. I had probably focused on so much coverage that I was not able to sleep. I do recall that. I had a very hard time sleeping for a few days because of it. But I remember what I was doing, and I remember the pain that it caused and the grief that it caused. And I remember being in that midday service. And I think what people were doing in that service, and another thing, that service was so full. I mean, it was full, overflowing to the brim with people. And I think at that moment and in that time, people were just looking for answers. And that is what the ministry was for at that time, and it still is. But the minister, our pastor, did give us a word from the Bible, and it was a comforting word. And everyone was looking for that because it was so drastic and so brutal and so painful. But, I mean, my story is nowhere near as tragic as some of the other stories that I heard today. One of the comedians that I follow on Twitter, Red Grant, he had a video. Someone had animated a testimony of a woman who was separated from her husband, and she had two children, and they had been separated or divorced. And that morning, she got a phone call from her ex-husband telling her that he was about to die. What a tragic story. Can you imagine that? That he was about to die. He was in one of the towers on floor 104. The 103rd floor, and he was about to die. Can you imagine that? I can't even imagine the pain of it. She said her daughter was standing close by, and he, she wanted to let the daughter speak to him in his last moment, but she hesitated. I mean, how devastating could that be? My testimony is that it was very painful, even though and just enduring the pain of the people on the plane, knowing what they felt, or at least imagining what they would have felt being in their respective situations. It is something else to recall it. Even though time does erode the memory of it and the pain of it, I did relive some of it when I saw that video today of that woman. Well, as usual here on Setting the Record Straight, I am, without speaking and commenting on my own personal experience, which I plan to do, by the way. I haven't stopped. In no way think that I have stopped. I have not. I will comment as events occur. And so in the interim, though, I was just also gave my attention to the story of the tennis player, James Blake. Today, I actually took the time to look at the video that was released by the New York City Police. And I looked at the video. I don't know if any of you have looked at the video. It shows James Blake, the tennis player, standing up. It looks like he's standing outside of the maybe the valet area or the entrance area to a hotel. I think they named it in the article what the hotel was, and that he was maybe looking at his phone, looking down. He had one leg propped against the wall, waiting very peacefully and not bothering anyone. And I see the police rush in. Well, I'm not going to say the police. I'm going to say a person that is plain clothes, in a white t-shirt, looks like, and some jeans, come in and just lunge at him, challenge, you know, just, there's a word I'm trying to say. I'm going to say just rush him, and rush him to the ground and start cuffing him with handcuffs. And then I see him. I didn't see him struggle. I didn't hear any yelling. Of course, there's no audio to the tape. And that lasts, I believe the whole and total of the tape lasts maybe about a minute. That's what it said. But what I find interesting is this. This officer just rushed in. I did not see anyone else around while the tape was rolling. But at the end of the tape, I see a person dressed in pink. It looks like a female, and it looks like an adult female, pointing to James Blake and the officer at that time. I don't know if she was a woman that had identified James Blake as the person that was involved in this credit card scheme, but she was pointing. She came up and pointed to him, apparently as the person, maybe that's the person that was the witness that said he was the one. And I mean, you know, this is the type of incident that I believe on one of the one of my broadcasts of Setting the Record Straight, I talk about how flimsy criminal cases are, and so how I've been was so careful as a judge because of witness identifications like that. And I mean, it is very unreliable. I think there have been studies that have been conducted about the reliability of witness identification. And really, sometimes that's the only evidence that is offered by prosecutors in criminal cases. And I, as a judge, I'm very hesitant. I mean, I very much look to gauge the credibility of a witness in such cases where there's no corroborating witnesses or evidence. Because on a slither of evidence like that, someone can go to jail for the rest of their life. I've seen it happen. And I believe that's what the case was when we have all these sexual assault, rape cases, defendants going to jail. When, in fact, you find years later, I don't know what takes so long, the DNA then is recovered and found. It is found that they have the wrong person in custody. Not only in custody, but convicted and serve significant jail sentences. And so eyewitness identification is, again, under attack. And it should be. It really should be. Because it is so tenuous. It is so tenuous and unreliable. I'm trying to think. I had the occasion to one time, I think, do a witness, try to ID someone. I don't know what it was for. But I tell you, I being a trained person in being an attorney, had such a hard time doing it. I really did. I had such a hard time. And that is another problem with the criminal justice system and some of these criminal cases that rest only on eyewitness identification, is that it is so unreliable. And we should not be convicting and putting people away, especially on death row cases, on eyewitness identifications only. Where there is accompanying physical evidence, yes. But because these kinds of identifications are so unreliable, a lot of people, a lot of people are incarcerated. And that's another thing. We have to invent a system to do a redress, and I'm trying to think of the word there, of some of these convictions is based on eyewitness identification only. This is again, raises the outcry that we should be, again, visiting this issue. A lot of the eyewitness identifications are not questioned in a court of law. As a defense attorney, I really grill witnesses when they identify someone. Well, I saw someone walking. I saw someone this. I saw someone that. I'm going to tell this short story, and then I'm going to end the broadcast. I defended a young woman that was charged with second-degree murder of her boyfriend. It was a late-night incident. And she won the case. I'm going to tell you how she won the case. She did not put on her own case. She chose not to. She attacked, through me, of course, the eyewitness identification of the people that said they saw the incident. And let me tell you, there were so many varying identifications of this young woman that she prevailed in a jury trial and won an acquittal because the identifications were so unreliable. You know, one person described the person as this. Oh, well, they're 5'10", and one described the person as, 5'2". It was so bizarre. It was a case that really the prosecutor should have not brought, but they did. But again, one of those witnesses was incorrect, like we see in the James Blake case? You see how easy it is for someone to put the wrong person in jail based on an eyewitness identification. And there have been studies, and I guess I haven't been pressed on the issue. I had one incident, I'm trying to think where it was, where I was trying to recall the identity of a person that was maybe in my presence 30 seconds, maybe in a store or something. And you'd be surprised what we don't remember, what we don't focus on, and what we do take for granted. It is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So it's another area that the criminal justice system is failing. It is failing miserably in that area because so many people, so many prosecutors are relying on one witness to bring and prosecute a case, and definitely an area that should be very vigorously reviewed and delved into. You know, I always say, as a judge and as a former judge and as a defense attorney, that the more detailed someone's account is of an incident, the more detailed there is a chance and high probability that that person is telling the total truth and intentional truth. More details. I have litigated both where a witness is very general, doesn't have details, and I'm inclined and have been inclined to discredit that witness or not believe that witness as much as I do a witness that is very detailed. They know everything. They know when and where, how. And it's a chance, more of a probability that witness is telling the truth and that you can rely on that that story of that witness. So therein lies another problem about eyewitness identification. I mean, it's very much, what if James Blake were not a famous tennis player? My goodness, would that person have been hauled off to jail and booked and charged? Would that witness have enough sense to come forward and say, I made a mistake and recant? I mean, it never happens for some reason. I don't understand that. Oh, let's just get someone. Well, the problem with that is you haven't gotten a person. You haven't apprehended the person that's responsible for the crime. That's all I'm saying. And like I said, I'm not defending any of the actions I took as a judge, but I'm saying, look, let's get the right person. Let's just don't get any person. Let's get the right person, because we don't want a person on the street robbing from people. I told you before, I was robbed as a judge 6 times. So I'm the first person that wants to get those that are committing crimes off the street. I've been victimized 6 times. Do you know how much trouble that is when someone takes your purse and robs your purse and robs your car? It's a lot of trouble. And it's a very grievous event. I'm sorry, my keys are sticking on my cell phone. So, I mean, let's just get the right people, not just anybody, just to say you got somebody. You know, so U.S. Open, all these, you know, people, important people are in town. Let's just say we got someone. We're effective. No, you're not. Let's get the right person. Tell that eyewitness I want the absolute truth from you. We're not going to arrest the wrong person. We want the truth. So this is the truth. Someone who committed these acts is still walking around New York City. And we have problems in the criminal justice system just like that over and over again. Well, okay, I'm going to continue as I do to update myself first. I'm going to update myself first. But if I am called to the attention of a story like this, certainly I take the opportunity to comment on it here on Setting the Record Straight on this Friday evening. Thank you. Thank you for listening to me again on the broadcast. You may go to the link at blogtalkradio.com/Setting the Record Straight 2015 if you would like to listen to an archive broadcast of this episode. Sometimes I say archive episode of this broadcast. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to be saying here. But in any event, you may email me at bks1233@outlook.com. If you have a comment, a question, a criticism, more information, in any event, feel free to contact me at that email address, and I will certainly reply to your email. Well, thank you again for listening, and have a good Friday afternoon, evening, rather. I'll talk to you next time.